This is a beginner guitar player. And this is a guitar guy. Internet's supposed to be fast. With First Nations Fiber, you get fast internet. Visit radio.fnfiber.com to sign up today.
An all-new episode of the Jeremy White Podcast, Tuesday at noon. Available wherever you stream. Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now. Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
Well, let's get right into it. Thanks to our friends at Universal Music Canada for hooking us up today with this awesome group right here out of Canada. A brand new EP is coming out today, September 16th. It's called the White Buffalo EP. They're also going to be hitting the road. Tour day is kicking off in Winnipeg on October 15th, running through to Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal, wrapping up Petite Canvas December 4th. Tickets are on sale now. You need to absolutely go see them. They're phenomenal. Welcome to the show. There they are, Crownlands, everybody. Look at them.
Wow. Hey.
Thank you so much. Wow. What an intro. Thank you so much, man.
That's, yeah.
Well, I think you've already said everything you needed to say. That's
amazing. We can just end it at this point.
Yeah. You got all the talking points in there. So, there you go.
It's half the battle. It's half the job. You know? Yeah. Talk about this EP. Yeah. I was just listening to it last night. First of all, you know, I love the previous EPs and, the debut record that came out last year. You work with people like Terry Brown, you know, all these awesome Rush producers. I love the fact that on, the first song of the EP, Wanted Dead or Alive, Bon Jovi, right off the top. I mean, that influence. Talk about your influences that were going into this record, because, I mean, Mitch and I are big fans of Bon Jovi, and I was like, this sounds like a Dead or Alive homage in a way.
Yo, that's sick. I've never
that's
heard
interesting.
That.
It's got the acoustic 12 string. We're going more for like this 80s King Crimson kind of thing. Like, I don't know if you ever got into like Discipline or Beat, you know, where it was Adrian Ballou, Tony Levin, Robert Fripp. And Adrian Ballou.
Those are great guys.
We're big prog heads, and so that was definitely more the sphere we were pulling from, some King Crimson, some Yes, obviously a little bit of Rush influence, and
Are we allowed to even say we're influenced by Rush? I'm just kidding. It's like
being from Canada.
Don't hear that saying.
Being from Canada, you're either influenced by Rush or Nickelback. So pick.
Yeah, that is true. Rush is like
Or
that
you want to go there,
young, or
go down the rabbit hole and say Triumph. I mean,
Cody loves Triumph. Cody's mom loves Triumph. Like every time, if I ever get in her car, Triumph is blasting. It's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. I see the Rush, not really a poster, but I see the Rush thing over your shoulder. And my next call, as soon as I'm done here, is I have to phone Terry Brown to talk to him about something.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Yeah, I do. So because we're going to interview him next week.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
So let talk him know to me. Say hey.
Absolutely will do. That's going to be my in, actually. It's going to be, hey, by the way, I was talking to Crownlands, and they just want to say hello. No, but talk to me about Rush and that, because you're also working with Nick. Why was it important to have those guys involved in your projects and to get that sound, and what do they bring to it?
Man, well, I mean, when we met Terry, it was a surreal moment, because we've looked up to him, our entire lives. I listened to Rush since I could remember listening to music, because of my father, and and Kev had a huge transformative experience listening to Rush, and ever since, it's been our favorite band, and we've always read through and always saw that name and watched all the documentaries and stuff, and we're Terry is the man, this is amazing. And so when we met him,
I mean, he's Rush's Mutt Lang.
So when we met him, we were this would be unreal if we brought music and worked on it with him. And so, we had to, it was just an obvious thing for us when we had the opportunity.
It's a damn shame that Lay Studio isn't around anymore, because that would have been the perfect spot for you to go and record with him,
I know. That would have been great.
I'm curious on your game plan in terms of marketing, because you've gone the route of EPs, a couple of EPs and stuff, four songs at a time kind of thing. Why not the full album? Is the marketplace just not there anymore? Are albums difficult?
I mean, ironically, this release that we're doing, White Buffalo, it's longer than a lot of records. It's it's a half an hour and it's only four songs, right? So
is 13 minutes. Let's be fair.
So I think it's important to recognize, we had this conversation with our A&R guy, Sean, and he mentioned Close to the Edge by Yes came out, today, it would be an EP. If Hemispheres by Rush came out today, it would be classified as an EP. So I think, like, I think it's really dangerous what streaming has done to, like, the rock world, because all of the best records are, like, you know, 4 or 5 songs and half an hour, 35 minutes long, in my opinion. And, like, all of our favorite records are, you know, thereabouts. Whereas, like, if a record comes out today and has less than 6 songs, it's an EP automatically, thanks to streaming DSPs. And I think that's, like, a really big bummer, because especially in the rock world, EP is such a dirty word. And so we've kind of, like, done away with that. And we kind of refer to it as, you know, Cody's christened it as capsules, or like a full exploration into, like, a thematic or musical idea. And however long that takes, if it takes 15 minutes, if it takes 40 minutes, it doesn't matter to us. We just want to fully explore that cohesively and then kind of move on to a different sound. And just for some reason, that seems to, like, work out to be
that thing. And by the way, the word EP, I don't even know why we still use it. It means elongated play. And it was how they stretched out the vinyl back in the day. And we're not stretching out the vinyl anymore. So it's kind of a silly term.
We're choosing a processing setting on Spotify now. It's like, which one do I want? More bass.
And listen, you look at Toys in the Attic or the Cheap Trick stuff, those great records were 28 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, it's funny. This EP, okay, let's call it EP because it's 4 songs, is longer than our debut record, like our full-length record. So it's like...
What is it?
Maybe we should have separated the Oracle into 3 parts, so that way we could have released it as an album. Like, it's so silly.
It would have been 4 songs, part 1, part 2, part 3. You know?
Let me ask you about the Oracle, because it is 13 minutes long. In terms of getting radio play and video play, you're not really going to get 13 minutes on any airwave.
It's a great bathroom song, FYI, for the radio guy. So,
No, but I mean, does that come into play into what you're doing? Do you think about, okay, how am I going to get it on a station? How am I going to get it out there?
That's why we released it with White Buffalo. I think it's about, like,
it's like
last time with Context, right? Because Context was the song that we originally kind of wrote, arranged, and recorded with Terry. And then we went on tour for, like, 2 years, and the arrangement changed, like, dramatically. And so we decided we had to, like, kind of reinterpret it in the studio. And so that's why we went in and worked on it with Nick. And then we did the vocals with Dave Bottrell. And now it's, like, this epic piece of music where the story is probably just as cool, if not cooler, than the music. Whereas, you know, but even then, when we made Context, we recognized, like, it was going to be really difficult as like a rock band in this era to release an 8-minute song and get it on the radio. Being said, you know, Shome in Montreal has been, like, incredible, and they've played that
they've
song.
They've been amazing.
Like, I mean, they are the best. You know,
every
like,
night
they,
I hear Jason
really
Rockman, who's my competition, blasting that song. So, you know, it's funny. I'm on the Beat 92.5, the pop station, and then Jason's my competition. So every time I'm driving home, you're like, Crown lands.
They've been really great. And obviously, you know, we aren't really making music that's going to fit into, like, the pop and alt world right now. And, like, we recognize that, but how do we, you know, so instead of trying to, like, take a 13-minute song and create a radio edit, we're like, well, we're going to write a really good radio song, hopefully. Right. And so that's why Right Way Back came out with Context, and that's why White Buffalo came out with The Oracle.
And, you know, I mean, with the type of music you guys are making, I mean, we've spoken to Jordan Rudess from Dream Theater and John Anderson from Yes. And it's like, you know, they all say, listen, at the end of the day, we're musicians and we're going to put out music for musicians. So if the radio wants to pick it up, even better. But, you know, we're not going necessarily for that. I mean, you guys could easily do a 2-3 minute and 30 second, you know, Shawn Mendes-ish rockin' top 40 tune. But do you want to stick to your guns, or do you want to, you know...
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Exactly. Like, you know, like Shawn Mendes has a skill set that we do not have, just as we have a skill set that Shawn Mendes does not have, right? And so there is something
we're
about
specialized,
playing your strengths.
I feel like
if we try to go down that world, we're already so far behind everyone else who's so good at that. So we've just decided to go down our own path and do what speaks to us. And right now, space operas. And epic visual storytelling, and then coupled with, like, you know, being really, like, in tune to what's going on in our world around us and in society, and trying to make sure oppressed people have a voice, like, through our music. You know, so it's like balancing that, like, that's kind of like what we've always been about. So it's just turning that up, and when that gets turned up, 13-minute songs about alien space queens show up, and
which is awesome.
You know?
Cody, I got a question. Was it Res Life for you guys growing up, or was it like city Indian?
Yeah, more city, absolutely. Like I grew up in Willowdale in Toronto, and then my parents had this little place right by Alderville, actually, and it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't anything like super like fancy or anything, but we were friends with the Alders there, and it was awesome.
Okay. Yeah. No, because I'm a Mohawk. I come from a native reservation just outside of Montreal. It's called Gatnawaga. So that's why I'm always curious to know like what the life was like growing up. Was it Res Life or city Indian?
It was city, man. I wish, man. But like I have family out in Nova Scotia. They all moved away. All of my indigenous side has moved away from Nova Scotia, unfortunately. Wow. But yeah.
What part of Nova Scotia was it?
It was around Amherst or like, somewhere around Amherst. They're like in Millbrook, I think.
Yeah, Millbrook First Nation. We ended up staying in Millbrook the other day. We were playing in Truro, Nova Scotia. And it was like just beautiful to for Cody to kind of like get out there. And so we've done like a few East Coast runs and it's been really cool. Like ever since we made the band and like, you know, seeing Cody kind of like reconnect with their ancestral roots. Right.
Cause it's been amazing, but like, yeah, so much like, it can be heavy too, like, you know, with that whole thing.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, especially with everything that's going on, you know, with Truth and Reconciliation Day coming up on the 30th, it's like, you know, I live with two residential school survivors here in my house. I live with my Dodama and my Baba Conrad, and, you know, they tell me stories all the time about, you know, what it was like going to elementary school, and like, it's crazy. So with everybody that's I'm just so happy that, you know, we got some great indigenous music that's coming out, and, you know, proper indigenous artists representing and waving the warrior flag for everybody across Turtle Island, because it's about time people realize what's going on to our people.
Yeah, man, it's about time people start listening to, like, you know, what people have been talking about forever, for time, you know, like it's just wild to me that it's like it's taken this long. But I mean, like, I think we're on the cusp of something really great.
Is that something that you wanted to do with this music?
Yeah, since the beginning, you know, we knew we wanted to be called Crownlands and to have it be like, you know, a big middle finger to, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because I had to explain to Mitch last night, you know, the joke behind your band name, because like I was like, Mitch, do you understand what Crown? I was like, because they come from Crown Land. They own the reservations. We don't own any of it. And he was like, what?
Yeah. Exactly. So we knew that, you know, we had to say something important with our platform of music, because, you know, when you're playing music and, you know, you have the opportunity to reach a lot of people. And so if you can say something really meaningful and that can be really impactful and maybe make people who had no idea what Crownlands is, you know, the term, or like, or have, or no, not know about what residential schools were or the missing and murdered Indigenous women, what's going on there. Like if we can spread awareness about anything like that, we're going to do it. And I think that's to honor our path, you know, as musicians and as creatives, with the public eye on you. You have to say something that means something to you. At least, you know, that's what Kevin and I firmly believe.
Well, I'm hoping with a new Governor General, Mary Simon, who actually has been a friend of the family for over 40 years, hopefully things will change. Listen, I've known Mary since the early 80s, and she's one tough cookie. Yeah. And if anybody's going to get something moving, hopefully it'll start moving, you know.
Being Indigenous in 2021 is more than just carrying your band card and getting your tax taken off by your guitar strings. It carries a lot more weight and a lot more meaning. So it's just so great to see, you know, you guys out there representing, you know, Crownlands at the end of the day, you know.
If I may, not to get away from that topic and just get back to music for 1 second, what is the live performance like? Because you are just two members. Do you run tape?
No click tracks, no backing tracks.
So what do we see when there's two people? Yeah.
How do you fill out the sound? There's four harmonizers off stage.
Well, I've got a wide assortment. My foot is the keyboard player, actually. Gotcha. I've got a couple sets of Taurus pedals on stage, so I can arrange contrapuntal bass lines.
So you're doing it old school with Taurus pedals. You're triggering stuff live in real time.
So like what we wanted to do, make sure when we started the band also, is that, you know, everything you see is what you see is what you get. And so there's nothing going on backstage. Like, we're never running tracks or anything like that. we're able to do everything in person.
Wow, that's incredible. And the concentration to get it done is gotta be
I think the worst part about it though is the fact that you guys are impressed about the fact that like our live show is live. Like how many people are like, oh, you know, like we throw the karaoke track on, we get on stage and dance around, and that's the show. And it's like, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I think it's quite dishonest.
Yeah.
I think it's the industry in the last 20 years, teach their own, right? Like it is what it is.
And technology's changed it too, because it's given people the opportunity to buy a cheap laptop and run Pro Tools or Ableton and, you know, put the whole thing going.
Well, it's allowed non-musicians to infiltrate live music.
Kevin's got a very, very.
Or, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it's another instrument depending on how you use it. So it either elevates the performance or it is the performance. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I guess
this was my experience a couple of years ago. There's a great festival in Montreal called Oceaga, and I was at I was at sound check, and the board guy says over the PA during sound check, he goes, "I need more computer in the mix," and I just went, "Oh God."
Well, I mean, I think it's honoring a musical form too, right? Like, I mean, There's different genres of music and different crafts and different art forms that like rely on backing tracks in a different way, right? Like if there's an electronic artist, if there's like hip hop artist, if there's a pop artist, I do respect that those are completely different crafts of which that we are about, and that's more about, you know, if it sounds good, it is good, kind of ethos, and like that, I respect that. And most people that are like into that kind of music, they don't care about like the work that goes into it. Whereas I see rock music, especially the kind of music that we're playing, is becoming more and more of a niche, almost like the way jazz has become, right?
Absolutely.
Where people go to a jazz concert. And so it's like recognizing like that is an art form that deserves to be preserved. And there aren't a lot of people that are doing long form music the way we're doing it. And the people that are going to enjoy that kind of music are not the same people that are going to an electronic or hip hop or a pop concert, right?
And so, not necessarily, right?
Like, I'm saying, well,
Spotify changed everything. Like, people listen to everything.
I totally understand. We are in a post genre world as well, but I mean, it's what we do on Spotify on record is, you know, we try and make sure that's like an accurate representation of what we can do live.
Right. Yeah,
and that again, like the kind of music that we love growing up, you know, like Genesis and Crimson and Yes and Rush and Floyd.
Don't forget, at the end of the day, I mean, with the price of concert tickets these days, people are expecting the perfect show and they wanted to kind of sound like the record. So if you need to use tracks or using the Taurus pedals, I mean, you need a little bit of help here and there. I don't see the problem with it. So
that's fair. I do though.
Talking about gear really quickly, Cody, I saw you guys. So in the studio, you had a DW kit and the videos, you're using some Ludwig vintage Keystone badge drums. Why DW in the studio? Why Ludwig in the videos and live?
Well, our tech, Graham Shaw, he builds and refurbishes drums, and he's also a vintage drum collector as well, which is awesome. Nice. He had this wicked DW kit, and I use his stuff, you know, like when we go into the studio, or I, you know, whatever the situation calls for. You know, if we want more of a, you know, a bright sound, he's got the drum for that. If we want a darker sound, he's got the drum for that, and you can tune them, and it's all dependent on feel and what I'm going for whatever recording. What we're doing, and if we're doing more prog stuff, I want like that tighter, like, you know, the tighter toms, like the kind of Fly by Night kind of, or Moving Pictures,
the 70s era. Dead sound.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I also have, you know, this awesome vintage Ludwig kit that's stainless steel I picked up that I use for live, and it sounds killer in the studio too. So it's really just shades for like, you know, whatever is the best situation.
Well, we're gonna have to get you a Vistalite kit, or for the next EP, next album, we're gonna have to get you over to Simmons Toms and get the
you know what, that's funny that you said that, because I've been talking about it for like over a month now that I need to get some Simmons pads. I want to add those like to the back of my kit so I can just turn around,
get it, and rotate around. Listen,
get the like the vintage SDS7 pads, you know, like the octagonal ones. Oh, that would look awesome.
Dude, that's exactly what I'm doing.
See, Mitch, I do the best intros. I know my gear. Jeez.
Yeah.
Kill it today.
It's true.
Yeah.
I was looking at Kevin and thinking, Kevin, can I have my hair back?
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
That's all I'm thinking.
I'm just trying to hold on to mine like Cody. Jeez. Well, listen, the White Buffalo EP comes out today. It's available now where music is sold. And they got some limited edition merch as well. It's on vinyl. I'm surprised you guys didn't do like 8 tracks at this point or something really, really vintage.
Well, we actually have cassettes this time around, which is very exciting.
Yeah,
who knows? Maybe we'll do 8 tracks. I don't know anyone who has an 8-track machine anymore.
Listen, I grew up in the time where I had an 8-track player in the car. Nice. We don't need 8 tracks.
Let's not repeat that.
Actually, you know what? Rob Zombie just put out some 8-track, like limited edition 8-tracks of his new album. So, you know, but he's like, he's a 70s guy. So, you know, he likes the vintage stuff.
Speaking of long songs, I had Dream Police, Cheap Trick's Dream Police on 8-track, and the song Gonna Raise Hell is 9 minutes. It was split up over different tracks. So I, for many years, I thought it was 3 separate songs. We don't need that experience anymore. The Oracle would be like 12 tracks. We don't need that.
It'd be hilarious if you did the Oracle in like 4 separate parts, where you put 2 sides on the A side and then 2 on the other side.
To get the full song. Oh, yeah. Well, it'd be cool to do that, you know, like the way Record Floyd did, you know, where you like bookend the record, where we, you know, you cut the front half and the back half and you put it like, you know, sandwich the rest of the album. Yeah. I do kind of like the idea of, you know, a vinyl and a cassette having a different track listing. I think a lot of great records had that. And you can experiment with things like that, again, bookending with long songs. And I enjoy that, you know.
I'll tell you who bookended. Europe, the band Europe, opened for Def Leppard back in 88. They started off with the Final Countdown, went into all the other songs, and then finished with the Final Countdown. So it was essentially the like Final Countdown medley. With a giant... And I was like, wow. Okay, because they started off with the first, and I went, wow, they're starting off with the greatest hit, and then it came back at the end, and I was like, they did a 45-minute medley.
That's kind of smart, though, because you pulled in the crowd right away, right?
Yeah, you did. Everybody came running from the bathrooms right away, I'm telling you.
They're like, holy shit, the one song I wanted to hear!
That is dangerous, though, right? You know, you're playing through, you know, your deep cut, and you look up, and you're like, oh, everyone left?
Yeah.
It's like they came for the one song. So that is smart, though. Yeah, it's like, hey, guys, do we open
that, that's
or
Mitch during the drum
it?
Solo. Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
You'll see.
I have spent every drum solo in the bathroom over the last 30 years. But
Even Tommy Lee's roller coaster drum solo is like the bathroom.
Waste of time. No.
Anyways,
I will finish by saying this. Let's finish on a positive. I'm looking at the Crown Lands White Buffalo artwork in front of me. It is absolutely gorgeous. I don't know. What's the story on that? Is it a picture you commissioned? Did you own it? Did you draw it? Because it's gorgeous. That's merch central right there.
That could be a Tim Hortons cup.
That is ambitious, Jeremy.
we actually commissioned our buddy Quinn Henderson, and he's an incredible painter. And
he took it up.
Yeah.
No, it does look great. Awesome. Yeah, that's the cool thing about you guys. You know, you do the socials really well, and you know, for a rock band, you know, that's trying to make it for themselves in this day and age, it's like, it's really cool. So I just wanted to give you guys props for that.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get to see you at the Petit Campus on December 4th in Montreal. They're doing a bunch of big gigs. The Axis Club in Toronto on December 1st, Ottawa on the 3rd, and wrapping up in Canada's best city, Montreal, on December 4th. We'll see you there, Petit Campus. Crown Lands, make sure you pick up the new EP. It's available now. Absolutely brilliant. Guys, love this EP. Honestly, best of luck with it. And we'll see you in Montreal in December.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks so much, Jeremy, Mitch. Thanks for having us, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks.
An all-new episode of the Jeremy White Podcast, Tuesday at noon. Available wherever you stream. Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now. Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.